Welcome to Crunching Tackles, where we break down the hardest hitting social issues in sports. On today's show, war is raging in the Middle East after Hamas launched an assault against Israel and Israel had to retaliate. And we're going to take a look at the conflict and tie it into some sporting stories along the way. My name is Chad Wiley, and with me, as always, is John Nekrasov. And John, how are you doing this week?
Well, it has definitely been a weird week. We'll just say that. I mean, I don't remember when we last recorded. I guess it was 2 weeks ago, something like that. And I guess the week following, right, Hamas invaded Israel. And for those of you who may not know, my family's Israeli. We've got family in Israel. And so it's been a strange and kind of scary time. And we'll get into that. This will be a little bit of a weird episode, I think. I think we'll cover a lot of issues that are related to issues we've covered in the past, and also cover some new things and maybe jump into politics and history a little bit, depending on you know what we're feeling. But just bear with us. I think this is important content, and it's personal content to me. But before we get into all that, Chad, how are you?
Yeah, doing good. I feel like I've had my nose buried in the New York Times this past week.
Yeah.
And I've been alternating flipping between the live blog for the Israel-Hamas conflict and the live blog for the Speaker of the House vote. And so I can't say that either of those subjects have been particularly enjoyable. There have been some, I guess, pretty enjoyable sports along the way, including I guess it's safe to say, unexpected winning record by the Pittsburgh Steelers so far. That's not something that you can relate to, so we don't need to dwell on it too long. But that's been kind of a surprising blessing that I've gotten to actually enjoy some Steelers games this year.
I just like to say Arsenal beat Man City since the last time we recorded. That's a fact. Story. That's a thing that happened. That has not happened, I believe, in the entire course, in the Premier League at least, in the entire course of this podcast. There are not a lot of positive things in the world going on right now, but that was a positive. Man City losing is
hopefully we can do a normal podcast in the near future, talk about some little bit of baseball, a little bit of other things. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on. But you're right, John, and thinking about kind of podcasts where we've taken this tone before, I think back to summer of 2020 with the Black Lives Matter episode that we did, where we talked much more about the actual issues than we did about the sports, and then we, you know, at times tried to tie it into sports. Same with the Ukraine conflict earlier last year. I think this is going to be a similar thing where there are certainly sports that will be talked about along the way in relation to this conflict, but we also just want to kind of take a note of where things stand and how we feel about it. It's been interesting as I read to know, you know, when I know what town you have members of your family in Israel, as they have been, you know, specifically targeted in certain times throughout this conflict, both from Lebanon in the north and also some of the rockets that have been launched from Gaza have been targeting the city where your family has been. So first and foremost, just prayers for, I don't know, they're not the Nekrasovs, I assume is their last name, but
some of the bar, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Thoughts and prayers to them and to their community, and you know, of course, all of Israel and the innocent civilians in Gaza as well. But I think we'll jump in and just try to kind of hash through our feelings and also try to provide some interesting facts from the sporting side as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess just to start off from my angle, right? Like full disclosure, I was born in Israel. And this is a very personal topic for me and my family. You know, it's not something, I've never lived in Israel permanently, but I've been back and I've had family there my entire life, right? And family are dual citizens. And, you know, when you see something like this unfold in real time, right? Like I think to a degree, we're both talking about this because we are, you know, ex-journalists, and, you know, we love, I guess we believe in the institution of journalism and informing people and providing context for the issues of our world to be important, right? So just putting myself out there, you know, I obviously have skin in the game here, and I am praying for the innocent civilians of Palestine, and you know, from the Israeli angle, I think there definitely are people that I disagree with deeply on their views on the state of Palestine, but the vast majority of Israelis just want to live in peace, just like the vast majority of Palestinians do, right? And it's heartbreaking to be in the situation. But that is kind of the angle, right, that I'm coming from. And, you know, it has... There have been very few times in my life, if any, that I've felt so emotionally invested in the news, that I've felt so impacted by what's going on. And I can only, like, I can talk to family members and I can scroll Twitter. And that's my only interaction right now with an existential threat to Israelis who are just living in their own homes, right, when Hamas invaded. And also, you know, something that we're going to get into, which is the broader world's response to the situation, and many people around the world who clearly hate Jews around the world. And that's something that affects me on the ground here in America, right? So I think that's kind of all that's going through my mind. And we'll get into a lot of details and context and, you know, think through the various reactions of organizations and people, good and bad. But yeah, I think it's... I feel complicated coming into this conversation. I feel conflicted, like anyone who's sane does feel about war. But I also feel, you know, very angry about what has happened and the vile, you know, the vile actions that Hamas perpetrated, you know, has perpetrated in the past and specifically perpetrated last weekend.
Yeah, you mentioned that you haven't felt like this frequently, and that's because, at least in the 14 years that Benjamin Netanyahu has been prime minister, there really hasn't been a war like this. Mm-hmm. Israel has not been in this direct of a conflict in at least the last decade. You know, it was really meaningful for my wife and I to spend some time with your dad over the 4th of July and hear his mm-hmm. story, both as a Jew in Russia and then in Israel and now in the States. And so I, you know, just... as someone who has gotten to know you and your family, obviously care a lot about this story as well. Let me just say the things that we're not going to do on this podcast. We're not going to be talking about Israeli politics. We're not mm-hmm. going to be talking about the Benjamin Netanyahu government. And we're not going to be talking about, you know, this, the changes being made to the Israeli court. We're not going to solve the two-state versus one-state solution on this podcast. We're going to talk about what's going on mm-hmm. and the reaction to it, and then maybe shed some light on the state of our culture along the way, which is mostly what we do on this podcast. So the briefest of overviews, 10 days ago, as we recorded this on October 7th, there was a widespread invasion of Israel by Hamas. It involved them using trucks to pull down physical barriers and drive through. It involved people using parachutes to come onto Israel from the air. And they invaded several villages in which they killed hundreds of people and took many hostage. They took women and children hostage. They killed men and women and children, civilians. They beheaded babies and killed 40 infants. They burned people alive in their homes. And in the matter of a day, the entire geopolitical world shifted because mm-hmm. of this terrorist organization. They were immediately and widely condemned by the broader international community as a terrorist organization, which is what they are. Hamas is the governing authority of Gaza, and they have the majority political power in that land. Palestine and Gaza is also the home of 2 million people, many of whom are, you know, women and children. And so in the wake of this, the U.S. has sent troops to Israel because some of the hostages taken were Americans. The French government also has several people who died and/or were taken hostage as a result of this. So members of Europe, members of the West have been brought directly into this conflict due to their citizens being held hostage by a terrorist organization. And subsequently, Israel has taken countermeasures. The kind of measures that any country would take when their people were slaughtered and kidnapped. They have demanded the return of all their hostages. they have ordered the evacuation of the northern part of Gaza so that they can completely eradicate Hamas. This is not the type of geopolitical climate we've had for the last 10 years where there are some small skirmishes or a very, a smaller retaliation mm-hmm. for things that happen. You know, a few missiles get launched over the border, and so maybe one munitions depot gets bombed or something. This is not like that. This is a full-scale response to a full-scale declaration of war by Hamas. In the wake of it, Lebanon and Hezbollah have also entered the conflict, skirmishing with Israel along Israel's northern border. And so now we are in a state of war in which wide-scale missiles are being launched back and forth across the border, and in which Israel now prepares for a ground invasion of Gaza to eradicate Hamas and to free the hundreds of hostages who have been taken by them.
Right. And, you know, as we're talking on October 17th, President Biden is slated to arrive in Israel tomorrow. There is still an ongoing situation regarding an explosion at a hospital that occurred today. As when this podcast, you know, actually hits your feed, I'm sure there'll be a lot more information about what exactly happened. But as of right now, we know the blast happened, and it seems likely that it may have been a misfired Palestinian rocket, but that's as yet not completely confirmed. But regardless of the confirmed facts, that explosion has caused the cancellation of Biden's meeting with the leader of Jordan, as well as, I believe, a couple other meetings with leaders in the Arab world, which, you know, kind of indicates that peace efforts that Biden may have been able to make may kind of be off the table for the time being, right? And, you know, we also are not going to solve the question of how far should this war go. You know, the question of figuring out what Israel's war goals are here and when peace is necessary is a complicated one. And that also, you know, gets into questions of what are the rights of the Arab people within Israel? What are the rights of Palestinians? You know, it is a complex situation, and this could drag on for months, right? Israel has not launched a full ground invasion yet, but they have repeatedly said that they are going to launch one, and that will be brutal and bloody, and the international scrutiny on Israel will only increase, right? And so I think that's kind of the stage for the conversation we're going to have is, on the one hand, Hamas's reprehensible, barbaric, disgusting actions that are almost impossible to even describe. You know, every time I read a story detailing the things that actually happened, like, I get emotional even trying to process it. Like, most of the videos I haven't even like come close to watching. Like, I'm just watching videos of people discussing what happened is enough for me. And I don't know, I think that you have, on the one hand, all of that, right? And that necessitates a response from any country. And on the other hand, you have Israel and Israel's relationship with Palestine and the many people who believe that Palestine has a right to govern itself, and the complicated questions of what that may mean for Israel are less important to them than, you know, establishing a free government for Palestine that's not related to Israel in any way. And that, you know, as complicated and geopolitical and messy as that is, and as rooted as that is in hundreds of years of history, that's relevant to us today because those conversations are resulting in, you know, statements by sports leagues and athletes, some of which are resulting in people being fired, some of which are resulting in games being canceled due to murders. So this is a very, it's a current issue. And again, we're not going to solve it here, but those are the kind of the two sides of this conflict and the arguments that are taking place that frame this conversation that we're about to have.
Yeah, the two-sided argument and kind of the various responses we've seen have kind of gone on a couple different veins. One is that this is the equivalent of Israel's 9/11, mm-hmm. and that when you have such a dramatic national catastrophe, then you are, it is completely understandable for you to react with force, as America did in the moment after 9/11. And history can, you know, relitigate the 20 years that followed American military intervention following 9/11. But in the moment, there was no equivocating about what we needed to do. And as one person very well put it, except for Israel, imagine it being 9/11, but Osama bin Laden lives in New Jersey mm-hmm. and not Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Like, imagine the same kind of attack, but they're your next door neighbors. And then the other extreme of the argument is that this was a war of oppression by an oppressed people group who are struggling and suffering under a oppressive and colonialistic Israeli regime that has, you know, there's Gaza is one of the poorest areas of the world. It has severe issues. And we can talk more about why those issues are the case, but that's just a fact. And there is a lot of frustration. There is a lot of resentment that has led to the rise of Hamas being the government of that region. And I think as far as you and I are concerned, John, there certainly is a moral equivalence in terms of compassion for the innocents dead.
Mm-hmm.
The people who were burned alive in their homes deserve the same amount of compassion as the people who were blown up in that Gaza hospital, regardless of who did what. Like, in mm-hmm. terms of the innocence lost, there is a moral equivalence of compassion. Those lives are all equally precious and will be equally missed. But as far as you and I are concerned, there is no moral equivalency when it comes to the response of the IDF versus the response and the insurgency of Hamas, because the Israeli Defense Force is a nation, is a national military that does conform themselves to international law of war. No military is perfect, but they at least submit themselves to the regulations given by the international community and do the best they can to protect civilian life and to achieve military objectives. For the last 10 days, they have been urging people, they have been telling where their attack will be. They have been urging innocent civilians to flee, and they have been using their airstrikes to target military targets, even when that leads to some civilian collateral, which kind of leads to why Hamas does not deserve that same benefit, because Hamas not only intentionally killed innocent men and women and children on purpose as part of their invasion, but they also are using their own citizens as shields. And according to, if you listen to most neutral military analysts and people without an agenda on either side, part of Hamas's motivation for this attack was to provoke an Israeli response that would lead to the death of civilians and would therefore destabilize Israel's relationship with other Middle Eastern countries. And to the extent in which they have done so, for example, the Hamas leader who Hamas has confirmed was killed, Ayman Nawfal, he was killed in a refugee camp because that's where Hamas leaders go. They put their munitions depots under schools. They put them under hospitals on purpose. They tell their citizens not to leave on purpose because they want civilians to die, because they want Israel to be blamed for that, and they want other countries to denormalize their relationship with Israel. And so to the extent that people allow themselves to fall victim to this or fall prey to this ideology of moral equivalency, they are either intentionally or unwittingly playing right into the objectives of what Hamas is trying to achieve as a terrorist organization.
Right. No, you put it exactly right. And the thing is, like, this is Hamas's MO, right? And it has always been Hamas's MO. In Hamas's, like, founding documents, it basically says directly, it's not like hidden, you know, in some kind of like secret clause somewhere. It says, we exist to kill Jews and eradicate the state of Israel. Like, For Hamas, there is no two-state solution. We can talk about, you know, legitimate Palestinian authorities and what Israel's role is in its relationship to Hamas. But the fact is, the leadership of Hamas, the people who are fighting for Hamas, hate the existence of Jews and everyone that does not conform to Islam, but specifically Jews in this case. They have no respect for their own people. You know, these are evil people that care as little about their own people as they care about Jews. And they're willing to sacrifice innocent men, women, and children on their own side, just as much as they are willing to butcher the men, women, and children on our side. And I thought it was really, really interesting. So Yuval Noah Harari, who is a Israeli historian, appeared on a podcast called The Rest is Politics recently. And he was talking to the two hosts kind of about how to understand Hamas's perspective here. Because it can be difficult. It feels to me like when I read so many like think pieces about Hamas and Palestine and oppression, they try to like conform sort of like liberal, neoliberal like ideas of oppression and apartheid and colonialism onto the struggle, quote unquote, that Hamas has against Israel, right? And it's just a completely false way of framing the conversation, right? Because Hamas is a deeply religious institution. Their motives have nothing to do with critical theory or racial injustice or anything like that. And they say so. You know, they may pretend to external sources just to kind of get support, but when they are actually directly talking, they say their goals are to eliminate Jews. And the reason for that, and the reason for their sacrifice of their own civilians, is that in their mind, afterlife is the only thing they're fighting for, right? If you're a radical Islamist, you believe that if you die in combat, your salvation is guaranteed, right? And that's the only way to guarantee your salvation completely, right? You get to have all your virgins that you want in heaven, and it's like, it is a backwards, barbaric mindset that they're bringing into the modern age. And so they say, you know, killing our civilians, it's a gift to them, right? It's something that they are blessing the people of Palestine, the people of Gaza with in their minds. And they're blessing themselves with when they blow themselves up, you know, with suicide bombs, when they get mowed down by Israelis after the fact, right? To them, that's a noble thing, right? And that's not something that we don't think about conflicts. We don't think about our lives that way. The Israeli government has talked multiple times about how they love to preserve life because people naturally want to live, unless you have a twisted mindset that makes you want to die and to kill other people, right? And Hamas literally wants to basically prey on that. And so we're seeing that, right? They are willing to sacrifice Israeli and Palestinian civilians for their geopolitical aims. And a lot of this, and we'll kind of touch on this more later, a lot of this kind of ties into the fact that Israel has been normalizing relationships with nations like Saudi Arabia and Qatar. And I can tell you, Hamas does not want that, because that basically delegitimizes their claims to destroy Israel.
Yeah, much like the Ukraine war, it can be really difficult to read about this war and actually grasp the magnitude of the lives lost. Like, it's so easy to become desensitized to numbers. And the numbers of casualties are and will continue to be in the thousands on both sides of this conflict. And that's incredibly difficult to talk about and to deal with. When we talk about over 1,400 Israelis' lives lost on that first day, and we talk about thousands of Palestinian lives lost in the subsequent days, that doesn't distinguish between Hamas terrorists who were killed and innocent, or women and children in Gaza. But that doesn't mean that the status quo could be allowed to continue and that a ceasefire would be at all effective, because the reality is the status quo for the last 10 years, a decade plus, has already been leading to a place of this kind of unsustainability. Mm-hmm. And it's just not sustainable to live and to thrive in a world where monthly and yearly rockets are just coming across the border, and then you're retaliating, and then rockets are heading right back across the border. And you can't live a kilometer away from people who want to exterminate you. And so this is going to be bad, and this is going to get worse. But I think the world cannot be looking, both Israel and then the global community cannot be looking for a return to the status quo here. Mm-hmm. There needs to be a sustainable peace for Israel in which Israel is allowed to thrive and flourish. And there needs to be a place for Palestinians to go where they can be self-governing and at peace. And I think people are so quick to look to just de-escalate this conflict, and they're not looking at what a long-term future will be that will prevent future conflict. You mentioned Hamas's ideology, and this is a good way to kind of bring the conversation broader, because last Friday, the leader of Hamas, a terrorist, sent out a message to the world asking for a worldwide day of jihad against Israel and against Jews all around the world. When I saw that, I braced myself for what I thought could have been hundreds of deaths around the world, including here in the States. Thankfully, it was not that, mm-hmm. but there are 3 people dead as a direct result of that order. One is a teacher in France who was stabbed to death by someone who is an Islamic terrorist, and 2 Swedish nationals were killed in Brussels or Belgium, mm-hmm. As a result of, again, the work of an Islamic terrorist who shot them to death with an assault rifle. And that ties in, I guess, our first little bit of sports story as well, because there was a Belgium and versus Swedish soccer game that was supposed to go on, and that game was abandoned and not continued at halftime as a result of this deadly shooting.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I honestly, as of right now, I don't know if we know why he targeted them in particular. It seems like he just decided to start shooting into a crowd, right? Like, I don't think they were Jews or anything like that, or there was any indicator that they were. But he, in both these instances, right, an Islamic terrorist heard that call and chose to act. And though there were not any other killings as far as we know right now, there were mass demonstrations around the world, in America, in the UK, in Australia, in many other places, with people in some cases saying, you know, death to the Jews, in other cases, you know, chanting for the elimination of the Israeli state. In many cases, you know, protesting at synagogues and other places, you know, connected to Jewish people. And I think that is sort of where our reaction conversation happens, right? Because anti-Semitism is not a new topic for us on this podcast. And I think that's a large reason why this is so important for us to talk about, is the world's response to anti-Semitism in the last 80 odd years since the Holocaust happened has been pretty clear, right? Anti-Semitism is not okay. Obviously, it's a form of racism. But we have seen little, in the last 5-6 years, we've seen little moments, right, where anti-Semitism has appeared in the popular culture, and there have been varying levels of response and condemnation, I guess I would say, of those expressions of anti-Semitism. And people will often say anti-Israeli things, like we talked about this with BLM during the 2020 circumstances that happened, right? Pro-Palestinian, anti-Israel statements were on the BLM website at the time, and they eventually removed them. And then there were BLM chapters across America when this event happened on October 7th, basically posting in support of the attacks by Hamas on Israel. And there are lots of little things like that various areas of discourse that have occurred around the world. And honestly, I've been overall, I'll just say that I've been fairly impressed by how almost uniform the response has been against anti-Semitism from the broader society, both, you know, when it comes to these two instances of Islamic terrorism, people were clear, this is terrorist. This is a terrorist attack. Both the Belgian and the French authorities were clear on that. And on the whole, when people started speaking out and basically trying to defend Hamas's actions for various reasons, I was impressed by how many major organizations, high-profile athletes who often take stances that I would maybe not expect them to take this stance. People like LeBron James were clear and said, this is an act of terror and there is no place in our world for these actions and for anti-Semitism. And LeBron's mentions on Twitter were full of people hating on him for posting that. And I thought that was interesting. It was like, I don't know if you saw that, but.
Yeah. I mean, there's been a vocal contingency of people on Twitter attacking anyone for staying with Israel, including attacking like Jewish people. People like Amy Schumer are taking heat. People like Mark Hamill are taking abuse from people, pro-Palestinian people. There have been three kinds of reactions, and thankfully most of the sports world has been in the first category, which is the one you just said, which is standing with Israel and condemning Hamas. Good. A+. The second response is defending Hamas, calling this a provocation by Israel, saying that these people are oppressed and that they should use any means necessary to free themselves from their oppressors. That is the stance of the actual Black Lives Matter organization, and I'll talk about that in a second, and other people, including lots of student groups at colleges.
That's correct.
Which has not gone very well for them when it comes to their job futures, but at least they are, you know, using the free expression that this country affords them to prevent themselves from ever being hired in the future. And then there is a third response that's interesting, and that is the people who have remained silent when they would otherwise be vocal about other things. And this is the one that I think is the most complicated, because on the one hand, nobody has to speak on something when they're not educated or qualified to do so.
Right.
But when people who often speak on issues choose to be silent or to not take up an issue, people take notice of that. Mm-hmm. We talked about that with LeBron James previously in China. I had a coworker talking about how Taylor Swift never spoke about Israel during her movie premiere when she speaks about other issues. Again, I don't assume that Taylor Swift is anti-Semitic in any way. That was a night for her to celebrate her movie, and I'm not going to necessarily fault her, but people are taking notice of that kind of behavior. Mm-hmm. I would love to talk, as a brief aside, about Amari Stoudemire, who made some Twitter or X trending moments in a video he posted where he was being incredibly critical of Black Lives Matter for their pro-Palestinian stance. And this will tie in a lot of different Crunching Tackles podcast episodes, but Amari Stoudemire is, in my opinion, kind of the best case scenario of the ideology that Kyrie Irving subscribes to, which is the Black Hebrew Israelites, which is a subject that we talked about very extensively when we talked about Kyrie Irving.
That is true.
Amari Stoudemire was a NBA player, a very, very good one, who has since moved on with his life, and he is a member of was heavily influenced by the Black Hebrew Israelite ideology. And subsequently to his NBA career, he has converted to Judaism. He has moved to Israel. He has become an Israeli citizen. He has played basketball in Israel professionally and owns a team in Israel right now. And I think that the way that he has viewed himself, you know, he, again, we talked about this ideology, but he believes that he is a genetic descendant of the tribe of Israel, that he's part of the lost tribe of Israel, as this ideology believes that all African Americans are. And rather than use his platform to be racist against European Jews, which is what Kyrie Irving did, or engage in Holocaust denialism, he has assimilated himself into a organic Jewish culture in Israel. And the best case scenario of that is that he has, you know, claimed his identity and has assimilated with a group. The worst, you know, the negative spin you can put on that is that he's engaging in cultural appropriation for a culture that he only believes he is in because of a conspiracy theory that he is a real Jew. I'm not going to judge that right now. But the reality is he has put in the time, put in the effort to be knowledgeable about Judaism, to go to Israel and to be there and to live there and to be a citizen and to just assimilate into that culture. And so for him, as a black man, to be so openly critical about Black Lives Matter and their hypocrisy on this issue, the way that they have stood up for the oppressed when it comes to police brutality and issues of racism in America, but are completely silent when a people group who have been literally genocided in the last century and continue to face oppression all over the world, he's calling them out for their hypocrisy. And for about a day or two, I was seeing his video all over the place, and people, it got a reaction, and it pointed out, I think, a real, I mean, I'm not going to call Black Lives Matter a philosophically astute organization in the first place, but a real hypocrisy of what they're trying to achieve. And I think they've certainly lost a lot of credibility among certain people who would otherwise be supportive of them.
Right. And I think I didn't see anything on social media trending from like the parent organization, but I saw multiple things from chapters of the Black Lives Matter organization that were not only not philosophically astute, but were genuinely evil. Like I don't hesitate to say that. And like there were like gleeful posts about the murdering of Jews in the streets.
Are you talking about the picture of
the paraglider
of yeah. a pair? Yeah. Of a soldier coming into Israel on a parachute celebrating that.
Right. Like that to me is all I need to see. There's no equivocation there. There's no case you can make for, oh, there's both sides. Both sides are right here. You know, there is a clear right and a clear wrong. And if you are in support of, in any way, armed response against people in that manner, to me, you should not have any place to speak in society.
Again, they murdered children.
Literally, like, people are, we're so, and this I think is important, and when we're talking about the people who aren't willing to speak up about this war, I totally understand that perspective, and I think we've said on this podcast numerous times that maybe less people should be talking in the public sphere about most of these social issues, right? But there is a moral clarity that appears not when you speak, but when you speak about everything but something that you've actively chosen not to say something just about this issue, which is just about anti-Semitism, right? You're not willing to speak up, or even worse, willing to support anti-Semitism, right? Which has been something that has existed for literally thousands of years. And when we look at the Ukraine conflict, aside from some conspiracy theorists on the right, there's been very little equivocation about who's right and wrong in this conflict.
A sadly growing contingency on the far right.
It is a growing contingency, but talking about the people that the group that we're talking about here, of people who are largely silent now, say, talking about sports, the English Premier League, the Footballing Association in England, organizations like Wimbledon that banned Russian and Belarusian athletes from competing because of the Ukraine war. You know, they took very clear stances on these issues, and people, podcasts that we listen to that talk about sports regularly, and that when a social issue comes up, if they don't know how to talk about something, they bring in someone who does, have not done that.
Yeah.
In this scenario. And I think that's like, to me, that has to be hypocritical, right?
Yeah. I mean, you could talk about the hypocrisy of politicians, which is the most glaring and obvious. You have the contingents of congresswomen and congressmen who, you know, have been the first to defend the right for Ukraine to defend themselves, but then are blatantly or subtly pro-Hamas and call for a ceasefire and won't even say the word hostage and, support Palestine. And then on the flip side, you have people who have been against Ukraine's freedom fight from the beginning. And as soon as the Israel war breaks out, they want to, you know, they used to want to defund Ukraine so that they could fund the U.S. border. Now they want to defund Ukraine and give all that money to Israel. So, you, I mean, again, like, we're living in a time where there are two countries fighting for their survival against well-funded, I mean, I won't call it, like, terror or proto-terrorist organizations, like, or governments.
Right.
And the ability for people to selectively choose which one of these countries fighting for their survival and fighting for their people, which one they're going to support, is mind-boggling. Politicians are paid by our taxes to engage in these kind of discourses and should do better. Mm-hmm. When it comes to organizations that we talk about, like UEFA or FIFA, I would love to spend just a second about talking about the comparison to Ukraine. And this is not to diminish Ukraine. Everything we say, this podcast stands with Ukraine.
And absolutely.
Is anti-Russia. So for some of these organizations, be it Wimbledon, be it FIFA, for them to be consistent in their treatment of Israel in the same way they treated Ukraine, what would that look like? Like, there was such a unified show of solidarity for Ukraine that resulted in Russia facing numerous sanctions, both Russian as a country and Russian players. And I guess it's much harder to take the same kind of action with Israel because, again, we're not dealing with a country. We're dealing with a terrorist insurgency group.
Mm-hmm.
Gaza or Palestine does not have, like, a FIFA soccer team or whatever. There, as far as I know, there aren't any professional tennis players. Maybe they do. I don't know.
If Palestine has a... I actually don't know if they do have a team. I'm not sure if it's part of FIFA. No, I believe it is, actually.
Okay.
And in fact, Palestine does have a FIFA-recognized team.
Okay. As does Lebanon, mm-hmm. who is engaging in also a war against Israel. What would a consistent response from the soccer world, or from the, not just soccer, but the sports world look like to treat this conflict the same way they treated the Ukraine conflict?
Well, I think that's a genuine question. I think maybe it goes back to the fact that we need to be asking, should organizations be taking these stances at all? Because I honestly don't know. I think that podcasts and writers that have tackled issues like Ukraine and are not tackling Israel now, I think it's a cowardly move, to be honest. I think they're afraid of riling people up and getting blowback, because you'll get blowback from either side, but it's still your job to talk about it, unfortunately. Like, we are part of the world just as much as Ukraine is. But, I mean, we talked about how we thought that maybe Wimbledon shouldn't have banned those athletes, because as much as we agree, you know, like, we're not anti-Russia as a people group, but we are against the Russian government. We agree that Russia is the aggressor and is a bad actor in that war.
That wasn't Aryna Sabalenka's fault.
That's not Aryna Sabalenka's fault.
Right.
But, and here's the crucial question, and we talked about this before, and we're going to talk about it now, because I think this is the real sports tie-in of everything, is Arab countries, specifically Gulf Arab countries, are deeply involved in sports. They are bad actors. Saudi Arabia has been perpetrating actual war crimes, not questionable war crimes, actual war crimes against civilians in Yemen for years. Not a peep from FIFA, not a peep from the Olympics, absolutely nothing. And why is that? The reason that happens, the reason why Qatar gets to host the World Cup, even though they have human rights violations, even though, in fact, Hamas's actual leader, so we mentioned a Hamas leader like being killed by Israel earlier. That was their intelligence leader. Hamas's actual like governing leader.
The one who called for the global jihad.
Correct. Is not in Israel right now in Gaza. Guess where he is? He's in Qatar in a palace vibing along with the whole Qatari government. Qatar put out a statement, the nation of Qatar, when Hamas invaded and said, this is all Israel's fault. Palestine has a right to exist. This is not an act of terror. Basically putting all the blame for everything on Israel, completely excusing Hamas's actions, and obviously financially assisting Hamas. I don't know if we know the figures of how much money they've given to Hamas, but we do know that Hamas's leader is supported by Qatar, which would make you assume, naturally, given how things work, that Qatar is also funding Hamas, just like Iran is. And so that then leads us to ask, okay, so these governing sports bodies are in the pocket of these countries that all of our sports media have been talking about and litigating for the last, I mean, when, 6 years since the bid was given to Qatar in, like, I don't remember, even like 2011, 2012, something like that.
Yeah.
And the last decade has been litigated by the sports media. But now we have the situation where people have drawn their lines already and they say, Israel's an oppressor state. Palestine can do whatever it wants to get through and create its own state however it wants to, which is destroy Jews. And that's backed by all these countries, right, that we have been litigating for years, for hundreds of hours cumulatively across the sports media landscape, right? But then this situation comes up and these people can't draw the connections between the two things and say, these are bad actors. They're supporting this cause over here. Maybe it's not as righteous as you're claiming it is to begin with. You know, like, I do not understand when we come to the actual, like, sports media conversation about media and organizations, like, how are those things not connecting for people? I just genuinely don't get it.
Let me go out on a controversial limb here and say that imprisoning and executing homosexual people is bad. Oppressing women and not giving them rights is bad. And funding Hamas is also bad. And if your primary criticism, it doesn't even matter which one is primary. If you criticize these countries, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Iran, Afghanistan, for certain things, like their treatment of sexual minorities, like their treatment of women, and then don't speak about the way that they fund terror, that's hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Afghanistan is now, and this is, again, a part of the world that is steadily getting worse, as Afghanistan is now controlled by the Taliban and has been taking away the rights of women that U.S. freedom was able to give them during our time there, and now they've lost all that. All that progress is gone, as Iran is funding Russia and their war against Ukraine, providing weapons, and is also funding Hamas and Lebanon and Hezbollah in their fight against Israel, as Qatar is on the one hand trying to look like the peacemakers in Russia by brokering an agreement that brought four Ukrainian children back home to Ukraine with their families, but is simultaneously housing the leader of Hamas. There is a messiness here, but there is the need for moral clarity from journalists, from podcasters, and from our political leaders, from Joe Biden, who has, to his credit, shown a tremendous amount of moral clarity on this issue.
Sure.
Tremendous amount. Again, that podcast you mentioned, The Rest of Politics, he cited that, you know, Joe Biden might be the most popular politician in Israel right now because he has shown moral clarity on where we stand on this issue. And that's good. And again, not to repeat myself again, but a podcast that ignored it and just wanted to cover sports, you're not going to hear a word from me. But if you took the time, took an entire episode to criticize Qatar when they had the World Cup, to criticize Saudi Arabia when they bought Newcastle, to engage in this kind of behavior and have nothing to say now, it's wrong. And it is self-defeating the type of journalism that these people and these organizations are claiming to uphold.
Yeah, I think that's really well put. And again, I think this takes us back. I mean, really, the perfect example of this is Jordan Henderson, quite honestly. I put this in the rundown earlier, and now that this conversation is actually here, I mean, it is the perfect example. So Jordan Henderson, if you don't know who he is an English soccer player. He's at least was, I don't know if he still is, but he was the captain of the England national team.
Did he make the team this break? I don't even know.
He was on the bench.
Okay.
Today, yeah. He, ahead of the Qatar World Cup, was very outspoken about his views on, you know, wanting gay people to have rights. And wanting them specifically in Qatar to have rights, obviously, and outspoken about how wrong it was for the regime to behave in the way it was, and saying that, you know, being in Qatar was a statement by the English team. I think he at least tried to wear like a rainbow armband. I don't remember if he actually did. Do you?
Well, wasn't Harry Kane going? No, he was the England captain, and he wanted to, and then they were told that they couldn't.
Right. Yeah, I'm thinking of Liverpool. Anyway, prominent England player, revised.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was a prominent athlete who was the one who was making statements, you know? And he then, shortly after, sometime this year, announced that as the Saudi League was expanding, as money was being thrown around, Saudi Arabia, which has a very similar stances on LGBTQ people, on women, as Qatar, and are, you know, very closely linked, said that he was taking the Saudi oil money and was moving to the Saudi League after saying everything that he had said about how it was wrong to, you know, participate in what was happening. And then just basically just became a spokesperson for the Saudi League in English speaking media afterwards. Right. And basically when asked about it, has just kind of been like, yep, you know, I did it. Like no actual defense. And I don't know, to me, those things are very similar. You know, that decision to speak only when it suits you, when public opinion kind of matches, when public opinion demands that you say something and it's popular, then you ask the question, right? But when it confronts your point of view, when something is put in front of you that doesn't fit inside your lens for viewing the world, you refuse to talk about it. And ultimately, kind of where I want to leave what I'm saying in this podcast is all of this whole conversation comes back to, do you believe the Jewish people have the right to exist in their own state? You know, there has been a phrase going around on the internet, from the river to the sea. That's a phrase that is being used by Hamas, by Palestine, by people who support Palestine. And what that means, in no uncertain terms, is that they believe they have a right to the land between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea, which is all of Israel. These people will say, on the one hand, that they want a two-state solution. But that's, to be honest, for most of the leadership, I'm sure there are lots of Palestinians who want that. But to be honest, the history does not back that up. Because in 1948, in 1947, when the UN agreed on a two-state solution, what happened? Israel was in its own spot, surrounded by the entire Arab world, and the entire Arab world invaded Israel and said, no, we don't want a two-state solution. We just want one. You don't deserve to be here. Israel survived, right? We're still there. And all the wars since, no matter who's invaded us, we're still there. Right, the Jewish people still are in the state of Israel, and the people who say Israel doesn't have a right to be there, my question to you would be, well, where should Israelis go? Where should Jews go? All these people who are complaining about them are the same people who complained about them being in Germany, being in America, you know, throughout hundreds of years, right, saying the Jews didn't have a right to coexist in normal society with people. So Jewish people eventually had enough and moved to their own state where they could have the freedom to govern themselves, right, which is the exact same thing the Palestinians are asking for. I am fully in support of a two-state solution if Palestinians are willing to coexist with us, you know? And that's the question. Israel's not going around just trying to take land from all of its neighbors. Israelis just want to survive, right? I mean, there are people who are expansionists, but that is not the majority of Israelis.
Yeah.
And I think that's for me, that's where this lands. Like, if you're not willing to speak about it, to me, very often that's because underlying all your ideology is the belief that maybe Israel shouldn't be there.
From 700 BC until 1944 AD, the largest superpowers of the world had one thing in common, which is hoping to eradicate Israel. From Babylon to Rome to Hitler, that was their goal for thousands of years. When Israel became a country, they didn't take their country by conquest. They were given it by the West, spearheaded by America and by Harry Truman, who morally believed that Israel deserved a home and the Jewish people deserved a home. And for 80 years now, Israel has had one, not just because their military is great, but because the moral leaders of this world have decided correctly that they deserve one. And at this moment, as there are fringes of the West who are siding with Hamas, it's important for the Western leaders, and to their credit, they have, to stand united on the fact that Israel deserves their home, that their home will not be taken away, that they have a right to retain the people who have been kidnapped from them, and to eradicate the existential threat to their own existence. And hopefully, the unwavering commitment to that objective does not fade. And I guess the last thing I want to say is that our prayers are with the families of those who have died on both sides. Our prayers are with the hostages right now who are taken and who do not know if they'll ever see their loved ones in their home again, as there are real threats that hostages will be executed in the near future, and maybe some already have been. And our prayers are with the soldiers who are fighting for the IDF to rescue these people, not only for their complete and total victory, but that there may be instances where they can show compassion on the innocent Palestinians, but that is secondary to their primary goal, which is to retain their people. And let me just say lastly, there is not a country on this earth who would not respond the exact same way to hundreds of their people being taken out of their homeland and physically carried off to a foreign country. If that happened in America, if that happened in any other country in the world, the response would be no different.
I think that's absolutely true. And yeah, I just want to reiterate that, you know, I can speak for us, I can speak for my family that, you know, we are praying, and we appreciate everyone's prayers, everyone that has reached out to us, you, Chad, you know, being clear in your support for us, clear in your prayers. I know that all Israelis, all Jewish people appreciate it more than you guys understand. And yeah, I mean, my prayers are for justice and also for peace. You know, no one deserves, as an innocent person, to be stuck in the crossfire like this. And I think where I kind of want to leave you guys is, like, if you've listened all the way through to this, and you have opinions that you want to share with us, like, this is, I have my stance as an Israeli American, and it's clear, but I'm always willing to talk to people who are willing to talk to me, you know, people who support Hamas. If you do, to be honest, I don't want to hear from you. I doubt you're listening to this podcast, but, like,
they didn't make it this far.
Yeah. I don't think you made it this far. For me, something we've always emphasized is that a democracy is based on dialogue. That's part of what makes America unique. That's part of what makes Israel unique. Israel is an incredibly chaotic place with an insane government and lots of coexisting factions that all disagree on literally everything, just like, you know, rabbis arguing over the Talmud, right? But Israel exists to give those people a place to disagree,
right? I mean, Israel didn't even have a government until this war because they couldn't agree.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, that is, even when a democracy is failing, that is the definition of a democracy, right? Is that we have the space to coexist and to talk. And so if you disagree with anything either of us have said, I think I can speak for Chad too, that we want to hear from you. We want to hear what you disagreed on. We want to hear why you differ from us, and you know, how you think that both the world at large and the sports world could handle things differently, or why they're justified in their response. Like, I want to hear that, because, you know, I think it's valuable. I think it's valuable to have dialogue in these situations and not shut it down. So that's kind of where I want to leave this. I appreciate you taking the time to just chat through this and be honest. It's an insane time, but I think it has been worth talking about.
Yeah, I think it's important that we did have this conversation, even though it was, you know, in some ways limited to what we normally talk about, not only because of your heritage, but because it would feel wrong to get on here and talk about playoff baseball or anything else in the wake of this going on, not just because of the things that we otherwise talk about on the podcast, but just, again, the perspective on life and when it is right to engage in frivolity and when it is wrong to. And this would be a moment where it would certainly be wrong to. My last thing, and you know, you mentioned this is just I don't have the answer here, just an encouragement, but you mentioned the munition that blew up the hospital in Gaza today. And I would just encourage people to just have a diverse set of news sources, please.
Yes.
if you're listening to this podcast and you literally haven't heard most of what we're saying about like beheaded babies and things, like, follow more people who disagree with you. And if you've never heard of like certain things on the other side, like the Palestine Liberation Movement, like, engage with that side too. Like, understand what a two-state solution is. Understand what's going on the ground. This hospital thing was such a clear example of how opinions can be made from the smallest amount of quote-unquote factual evidence, and hours later the story is still not known, and yet otherwise serious institutions of international law and politicians have already made firm stances based on what is frankly rumor. And the reason why we're not going to talk about exactly how we know that happened is because we do not know what happened. We have our theories, but we're not going to tell those until we know, and until the U.S. government has an independent review of where that rocket was launched from. So for people who have already gone on to blame Israel, and it's just it's a small example of a broader problem, and the problem is the echo chamber of our social media, and the bias of your own presupposition that lead people to find the smallest tidbit of quote-unquote fact that supports their already well-rounded philosophy of life that they've decided upon, that does not allow for contradiction, and to which all evidence must be conformed to and not taken from. And just take the time and pursue the work of well-rounded education, because it will make you a better thinker, a better talker as well, when you do have an opinion. And it takes away so many of the counter arguments that you'll get against you when people can confirm that you've actually been misguided in your own factual understanding. So that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. And ultimately, I think that's what good journalists do. And to a degree, all of us in the information age need to be good journalists. You need to look for the facts. You need to wait to speak until you know the facts. And then when you know the facts, be clear in your communication. And when you need to form your opinion, form it based on the facts. I obviously, again, I have skin in the game. That's hard for me right now. I will freely admit that. But I still want to be committed to that, you know? And I think all of us should. Democracy fails when people refuse to do that. And we have seen that many, 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 many times over the last decade.
So do that.
Go be good journalists. Continue to pray. And yeah.
Yeah. Anything else for the pod this week? It feels wrong to move on to any other subject, but do you have anything else that comes to your mind, or should we just wrap it up here and hopefully we can get back to maybe some more fun stories the next time we podcast?
Yeah, I think the only thing I read American Prometheus. I finished it. That was my Oppenheimer, which feels very resonant right now
Yeah.
for that film. But it was an interesting read. I
It's a
highly
good
recommend
book.
it.
It's a good book.
Aside from that, I'm good.
I will recommend something.
Okay.
It's a lesser known story of the Jewish struggle during World War II. Everyone knows about Schindler's List, and everyone knows about, some of the more famous movies. But if you haven't seen The Pianist, The Pianist is a really, really fascinating story about a Polish Jew and his fight for freedom during the Holocaust. And I think that now would be a great time to just spend some time understanding the plight of Jews for the last, well, for all of human history, but particularly in the last 100 years. And if you have some time to check that movie out, it is long, but last I checked, it was streaming on Amazon Prime, The Pianist, with Adrien Brody. It's an excellent film, and I think it would be very resonant in this moment.
Yeah, no, totally. I actually still need to see it, so maybe I'll see that soon.
Yeah.
But I think where I want to leave you guys is if you have, there aren't many of us Jews around the world, to be honest. There are a handful of millions of us, but there's not that many. But if you do know one, reach out to them, ask how they're doing. And obviously the same is true if you have, people who are connected to Palestine who may be affected by this. But specifically for your Jewish friends, reach out to them because they, like I feel right now, feel under attack, right? An attack on Israel is an attack to a degree on all of us as people protest around the world against synagogues existing, right? So check in on people and try to understand, look at Jewish literature, Jewish movies, but most importantly, just so many of our conflicts with people fade away when you actually understand what other people are going through. And so much of anti-Semitism just comes back to that. They're the strange other in your midst who you don't understand and therefore want to cast out. And we have a rich and valuable history that I personally think is interesting, but I hope that you would find that out, for yourself. I think that's all I got.
Yeah. I think that's it for the podcast. We'll continue to obviously keep both of our eyes on this story, and we'll talk about it as it continues to be relevant. We hope that you all found this both insightful and also challenging in some ways, and that you'll want to engage with us further on this topic. We'll continue to talk about these international conflicts as they resonate with other parts of what we do. We will also try to, continue to talk about playoff baseball and other things going on, and hopefully be able to enjoy some football and as we get into this Thanksgiving and Christmas season as well. But it would have been remiss to not have done this episode, and I think it's important that we did. So until next time, we hope that you all continue to be well and be safe, and we'll talk to you later.
All right. Shalom, guys.